We believe that alcoholism is a disease and that Alcoholics Anonymous is one solution to that disease. I'm here to bring you the voices of its members. Everyone that comes on the show, including myself, is an active member and has found recovery in the rooms of AA. As you listen, please take what works for you and leave the rest.
Hi, my name is Andrea. I'm a recovered alcoholic, and I've been sober since October 12th of 1986. I just celebrated 37 years of sobriety, and that is a miracle. My natural state of being and my most comfortable is drunk and loaded. And I found an ease and comfort here in these rooms that filled that hole that alcohol and drugs filled for me. It's funny not to be sharing to a giant room of people here, so bear with me. I'll start at the beginning. I'm from Salt Lake City, Utah. My parents were super privileged. You know, Grandpa, it was kind of like a Camelot situation. They were given homes and cars to start this beautiful life, and they did so. And I was the oldest of three. It was a really fun time, I remember, growing up early on with Mom and Dad. They used to have these really swanky bridge parties. And this is my first memory of alcohol. They would go from house to house like every few weeks, and all the kids would tag along. And I just recall sitting on the counter with Dad, and Dad would make daiquiris. And I remember I would just sample these, and I loved it so much. I always had to be the one next to the blender watching all that go on. And I knew that those nights were happy nights. And whenever there was alcohol involved, it was joyous, festive, and I loved it. I also remember that I used to hide around the couch and take sips of people's daiquiris. It was like a frosted drink of some sort. But I remember I was to the point where people were shooing me away from their drinks. I remember those nights were my funnest nights and my most memorable nights. Perhaps I was loaded, and perhaps I felt that same ease and comfort I did later from the alcohol when I was 5 years old at those parties. Dad was a sex addict. And I just recall Mom standing at the window shears every night, crying, waiting for him to come home. I knew that there was heartbreak and sadness. And I cried myself to sleep every night when I was little. I remember my pillow was always wet. I had a younger sister and a younger brother. Dad eventually left. And there was a lot of whispering, but nothing was ever open, right? We kept everything tightened up on the outside and the inside, but we had to look a certain way and act a certain way. And I know there was love, so much love for my parents, but they were so distracted. You know, they did the best they could with what they had, for sure. And I learned that in AA, and I absolutely forgive them and accept them where they were then. And I've been healed from those, you know, that sadness and stuff. When I hit kindergarten, like the first week of kindergarten, I got bullied, and I don't know why. I don't know why they chose me to be the kid that was bullied all of the time, but I was terribly bullied socially from kindergarten until my senior year in high school. That was a lot. And so we've got the family thing going on and the at-school thing going on. If I felt sad at home or cried, Mom would say, stop crying. You're not sad. Or even if we were too laughy, funny, giggling in the back seat, I remember my siblings and I, she'd say, stop laughing. So it's like I would feel feelings, but they were like pushed away. I kind of thought I was invisible. I didn't know that I really existed. So anyway, that was hard. But I can tell you right now the facts are, none of that stuff matters about my, you know, in regards to my alcoholism. No matter what happened in my childhood, if it was fabulous or if it was crappy, when I took that first drink, I got the ease and comfort that I had to have, and I felt like I fit. I could not just have one drink. I had to go all night. I blacked out every time I drank, just about. My goal was to black out when I started drinking, and I had the disease of alcoholism. My brain is different than my sister's brain, who can have a glass of wine. I actually have a physiological disease, and it's in the doctor's opinion of the big books of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I read that, I related to everything. I have a physical disease. I have an allergy of the body, an obsession of the mind. The second I take that first drink, I just realized that this recently, when I take the first drink, it's like my body goes into immediate withdrawals. So I have to have more, right? It's like I'm in a withdrawal state instantly, and I'm chasing that. My first drink was at a friend's house. We had tested from the liquor cabinet at home, of course, but then my first drunk blackout, I was 14 years old, and I was at a friend's house. The parents were out of town, and the three of us drank a bottle of 151, got incredibly ill, blacked out. I vaguely remember putting a whole package of bacon in the microwave for like 15 minutes in the package. That I kind of remember the fallout from that. But after that, I don't remember anything until the next morning when I woke up in the sun on the trampoline, just hot. It was summer. And woke up in the blazing sun, throwing up over the edge of the trampoline, looking down. And I just remember my friend's little white dog was eating all my throw up. And I thought, I've arrived. I have found my best friend. And I know that my life's going to be okay now. You know, all the sadness and all that stuff, it helped me get through that. But in, you know, a combination with that was the disease that I have, the physiological disease and the allergy to alcohol that I have. It immediately went and drank every day. Every waking hour was spent trying to figure out how can I get alcohol? Who could buy it? We would go sit out at the 7-Elevens and we'd wait for somebody to go in the store and we'd ask them to buy us beer. All these young kids, right? And we would go to the country club and we would sit in the sun and we would drink to oblivion and burn ourselves to death. Now, that was our summers. I found drugs at that point and they were a great accessory to my drinking. It was something to do. It was something social. But, you know, that wasn't my thing as much. Of course, I did anything. You may know my drug of choice is more, but alcohol was the king for me and it owned me. And I had DUIs. I had wrecks. I stole. I lied. I cheated. And my family didn't know what to do with me. My mother had been raised by a senator and a congressman. They had to shred their garbage. They spent a lot of time in D.C. And here I am, the black sheep showing up. And it was a real disaster for them. My mother, bless her heart, she would try to fix me. I went to school in Switzerland. You know, perhaps that'll work. I almost drowned in a blackout in the middle of the night in a lake in Switzerland. I did get home with the whole same group and everything, but I drank my way through that. Got home. I wasn't fixed, unfortunately. So Mom had an idea. I can go be a nanny in Washington, D.C. So I went and did that for somebody in the State Department. I drove those precious children loaded every day. It still makes me sick, and I still have to work a seventh step on that and say, God, remove this guilt and shame. I've been sober for 37 years, and that one gets me, that I would put those children in danger. And I can't regret the past or wish to shut the door on it. I know that God's going to use it today for somebody else. When I was, I got sober when I was 21, and I'm 57. And I met my soulmate, worked at a ski resort, lived in a ski resort, and we both worked together. We both drank the same. He was way higher functioning than me. I was a disaster. I would lose jobs and stuff. He could hold jobs, and we were definitely soulmates. So July of 1986, he got a DUI, and he had to go down to the city and go to the drunk class. You know, the drunk class where there's a guy from AA, the police officers are there, and maybe some other person's there, and they give their little spill. And I surrounded myself with people that drank, right? It fit for me. I was never around my family. I didn't think of alcoholism. I didn't know. The only thing, I guess, Alcoholics Anonymous to me was for the guys under the bridge. You know, that didn't have anything to do with me. I was very unfamiliar with it. So he comes home in July and he's waving a Jelinek chart. And I don't know if y'all know what a Jelinek chart is. It's a bell curve. And on the top left-hand side, you've got a normal life going on and you take a drink and suddenly things start going bad in your life down this side of the bell curve. You lose your job, you lose your family, you lose your marriage, you crash a car, you're homeless, you're on skid row at the very bottom or you die. And then on the other side of the Jelinek chart is where you recover And it shows all the levels of recovery going up to, full recovery and a normal life again. And so my boyfriend was a full-on scientist, atheist, and he's like, oh my gosh, we're alcoholics. Check this out. And he's showing me the Jelinek chart. And I'm like, what? I couldn't grasp it. He's like, we're alcoholics. We're about right here. And we just need to go to Alcoholics Anonymous and stop drinking. And we won't have problems anymore. I don't know what our problems were. We were wasted all the time. I mean, that was our problem. But we were just living that crazy life. And I felt like it was normal. And I think so did he. But when he saw this, it was really impacted by it. And the guy from AA talked about the disease concept in that drug class. And he was like, yeah, that's me. So he brings it home to me. That was in July. And he stopped drinking for a couple of weeks. In October, I was working at a preschool. And I was a three-year-old teacher. And during the years that I drank, age 14 through 21, I really never tried to stop drinking. It was a very normal part of my life, but I always tried to stop by midnight, and never once could I stop by midnight. It would be like, okay, just this one last drink at 11, and at midnight you're out. And then I do a line of cocaine, and you do the cocaine alcohol chase all night long. And pretty soon you hear the birds chirping. You look out the blinds that are all shut, and here comes the sun. It's time to go to work. And I would go to work and just be a disaster. So I tried to control that way. Family functions. I was unable to attend my family functions. I was wasted. And so many things that I wanted to go to, performances of the arts or family vacations, I couldn't pull it off. I couldn't get on a plane. My life was unmanageable, and I was completely powerless over alcohol. I have this bug. I got this bug. I definitely qualify here. I am not a heavy drinker. I am a down and dirty drunk. And garden variety, however, which makes me so happy because this is my home in Alcoholics Anonymous and you guys are my family. So October, one morning, Monday morning, I show up to work at 8 a.m. on a Monday morning. And my employer, she was a friend of my mother's, and she comes rushing in. She says, Andrea, your mother's in the hospital. We need to get down to the city. I lived up in a little ski town, and it was about 30 minutes to Salt Lake City. And so she scoops me up. We head down to the city, and she said, I don't know any details, but we just have to go to the hospital right now. Your mom's there waiting for you, or your mom is there. So we drive down, and we pull up to the hospital, and we walk in, and she says, fifth floor. And on the little buttons in the elevator, it says fifth floor, and it says psych unit / day spring. And I'm like, well, certainly mom's had a nervous breakdown. Let's go to the psych ward and see what's going on up there. And so the elevator opens, and it does not look like a hospital. I'm telling you, it's carpeted, and there's a front desk, and there's a woman sitting, a receptionist sitting there smiling. And she said, are you Andrea? And I just knew instantly. I was just like a caged animal. It's like, oh my gosh, what has my mother done? So evidently that was the other half of the fifth floor, which was called Dayspring. And it was a treatment center back in the 80s. And it was inpatient 30 days. So I walk in, and Miss Shirlene, who was the receptionist, she was an absolute angel, Al-Anon black belt, as she should be, right? Dealing with all of us on the unit. And she said, they're waiting for you down the hall. And there were people lining the halls. There were police officers lining the halls. And at the end of the hall, there was one open door. And, I just expected what was going to be on the other side of that door. And it was my family. They had flown in from all over the country. And there was the intervention circle. And they were sitting there with their yellow pads. And they had all done their homework. And they said, we want you to come here and sit down. And I just screamed, F you, mother. And and I sat down, and then they went around. First you go around, you say, Andrea, here's why I'm concerned about you. That time I saw you drunk on Main Street, and you were doing this and this with these people, and I was embarrassed for you, and I was embarrassed for me, and I know you don't remember it. Then the next person goes on it, and they all, they tell me the specific situations where they were afraid for me or themselves because of me. And then they go around and they tell me two things that they love about me, right? And so they go around, I love you because of this and this and this. And it's supposed to bring me, it's supposed to soften me up a little bit. And then the guy running the intervention, his name was Byron. He was one of us. And he said, well, your family would really like it if you stay here for 30 days. And I was like, what? I had no idea I was an alcoholic. That's what I did. That's what my friends did. And the company I kept, that was our lives. That was normal, everyday stuff. And that they were telling me, you know, and I said, F you to all of them. I got up and I stormed out. And before I left, Byron grabbed me. He said, hey, come into my office for a second. And I go into Byron's office, and I could tell he was one of us. I mean, I know now, of course, but he said, hey, before you go, I just want to let you know that you never, ever have to drink or use again as long as you live if you don't want to. And that those words, I think it was a higher power. It came out of a human, but it pierced the heart of my disease. And I heard that. I heard that. And it stunned me. The reason the cops were there that day is because my boyfriend, we were, of course, soulmates and full drama. And they knew he'd be down as soon as he found out I was there. He made it down the 30-minute canyon in about 16 minutes, and he came barging in there furious and said, absolutely, this is not going to happen. And we were together about a year at that point. And we sat down and talked, and I thought, hey, this is going to be a 30-day vacation for me, right? I think I'm going to do it. And my employer brought me here, so she doesn't care that I miss work. And he's like, you know, maybe you'll go to AA here. And okay, stay here. So I decided to stay. My family left. I didn't even want them to know I was there because I sure as hell wasn't going to do it for them, right? This was for me only, and it was just going to be a little break from work and all the stress of life. And so he left. I'm locked up for 30 days. They give me my jammies and my wristband, and I'm in detox for 3 days. And you don't have to go to the schedule during the day or the meetings, but I did. I attended, and on Tuesday night there was an AA meeting on the unit, and I was just like, how could AA be on my schedule today? I am so far removed from that. And I sat in the back, and this kid got up. And he was, you know, my age, in his 20s, and he got a 30-day chip, y'all. And when I saw him and the light that came out of him, I was blown away. And I said, what in the hell is Alcoholics Anonymous? This is incredible. And what really did it for me is listening to the preamble, how it works, and those steps. And those promises that were read at those meetings, and I know we all read them and we've rushed through them, right? Those impact, every one of those words impacted me at my very first AA meeting. So I never take those for granted. Those were such powerful words, and the way that they were written was freaking godsend. And the way we start our meeting with them is absolutely necessary and appropriate and such a gift. So I listened to those words, and then I listened to this guy get his 30-day chip, and my eyes were open. So I'm like, okay, this is Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's something new, and I'm willing to look at it. And that was Tuesday. I could not sleep for those first couple nights, and I ranted and raved and walked up and down those hallways screaming, F you at Shirlene, I need some sleeping meds. And she would smile at me and say she loved me and that it was going to be okay. And I'd say, F you. That's who I was. So I stayed. And you know what? In the 80s, it was rough because there was all this psychobabble BS. And I'm going to try to clean up my language tonight and not cuss. But if I do, I'm sorry. But it was a lot of psychobabble BS in the 80s. And there were all sorts of different books and self-help stuff coming out. And AA was really getting watered down. And if you look at the forewords of the big book, you can see the watering down of AA from the first edition forward to the fourth edition forward. And it's a crime. And that's totally different subject. But so anyway, that was the 80s. But however, I lucked out with this treatment center. They were in the first 164 pages of the big book. And that's where the specific instructions are to get sober. If we follow those specific instructions, we will get sober 100% of the time. And if you look at all the stats over the years, those first 100 that got sober, I think 75% of them got sober and stayed sober. Maybe the other 25% went out, but they all came back. Because all they did was focus on this work. And this was before we had the text, right? But this is where the text came from, is the work that the first 100 did. I announced myself as recovered because I am recovered. And in the big book, it says 16 times recovered. We are recovered. Only a couple times does it say recovering. I am recovered from alcoholism. I have the disease. I have the bug and the neurochemistry for it. Absolutely. But I am recovered from the hopeless state of mind and body. And I know that's exactly what it'll take to take me back there. And it's just a heartbeat away. It's a breath away. But I'm recovered. I don't suffer from any of that stuff anymore. And So the treatment center I went to, luckily, was in the book. And we did, I actually did a really awesome four step in treatment. I mean, it was awesome, right out of the book. You know, we moved through 1, 2, and 3. And I got to listen to Father Martin Chalk Talks. Look him up on YouTube. It's gold. He's a recovered priest. He's since passed, but look up Father Martin Chalk Talks. And I listened to those. We had an MD on the unit that was brilliant, and he knew the disease concept, and he knew the doctor's opinion. And so he would teach us about the disease concept every day. I had like an hour and a half with this brilliant MD that knew the deal. You know, this is not about my moral code. This is not about my willpower. I'm sick. It's like I have cancer, right? Except when we have cancer, it binds families together, right? I have the terminal disease that tears families apart. I have alcoholism. I will die from it or go insane from it 100% of the time. And I will take out lives that are anywhere near me. But I've got a terminal disease, just like cancer. It just manifests a lot differently. It is a physical, mental and spiritual disease because of what the physical stuff, you know, we do because of that anyway. So anyway, I was really fortunate in there. And okay, so that was Tuesday night. I go to my first AA meeting. Thursday night, they put us in the white van with our bracelets on, and they're taking us to an Alano club. And if you don't know, there's Alano clubs around the country. It's just an AA club, basically. A lot of them are called Alano clubs, but there's clubs all over the world. And if you're new, just know that wherever you go in the world, you're going to find a meeting. I've been to meetings all over the world, and it's the same story, and we are the same family. So anyway, we pull up in the white van. We get out, and we go in the Solano Club. I'm going to my second AA meeting. I had no expectations, but oh my gosh, these people were rough. I walk in, and it's their old big main chapel is where the meeting was. And there was a greeter at the door. And let me just tell you about greeters. If ever you go to a meeting and there's not a greeter, just stand at the door. It makes such a huge difference. It's changed my sobriety, like the preamble and how it works and the steps and the promises did. That woman at that door looked at me and she saw my wristband. She knew where we were coming from. And she said, "Hey, what is your name?" And I told her my name was Andrea. And she looked at me like, "Thank God. Thank God you're here." She had an authenticity and she was so genuine. And, I was just blown away by that. My life had just been fake. When I was a kid, growing up, drinking. And I looked into that room and there were a couple hundred people. It looked like 1,000 people to me. And the second she welcomed me in and I looked at that room and I knew that there were recovered people in there, that there were people as sick as I was. And they were in there and they were laughing hysterically, happy, joyous, free. All these people in this lovely chatter in the room and this just this feeling. And right then, I got a higher power. I got a power that was greater than myself when I walked into that room. There was no denying. There was something besides me that was greater than me that can do this. That can make all of us show up here like this and recover. And they meet in these rooms every night around the world all day. And it was stunning. So I went into my second AA meeting and I listened to the preamble and how it works and the 12 steps and the promises. And again, it hit me and I got it. I went back to the treatment center. We did the same couple of meetings we had every week, did family week. That was a mess. But I got to find out exactly who my biological family was. And they are my biological family. I love them. And I love them very much. And they do the best they can with what they have. unfortunately, they didn't get alcoholism like I did, because I got these gifts and some of them, you know. Anyway, I'm grateful to be a recovered alcoholic, and I wish so many of us could have it, but they're not, you know. And really strange for your sibling or a parent to come to you for spiritual advice. It's like, what? You're asking me what? But over the years, that's kind of what has happened. I've lived, when I walked into that room that night, I got the same ease and comfort that I got from the drink when I met you guys. And when I walked in that room, I got that same ease and comfort. And that has to be replaced. And that was replaced by the miracle that I was seeing in front of me. And the honesty. I've never had honesty in my life. And I listened to those people get up and share, and it was honest. And they were telling my story. 100% telling my story. This is where I lived in my head. And it was just amazing. And so today I have a wonderful relationship with my family. Of course, it took years for them to gain trust in me naturally. And I get that. But it's gone beyond whatever I would think. You know, the respect they have for me now is, I'm no longer less than at all. And if I can ever be of service to them, I'm there instantly, and they know that, and they can depend on me, and that's a miracle. So that's treatment. So got out, got a sponsor who was in the first 164 pages. I got a really badass sponsor, and she had been in that same treatment center a couple of years before. And so she stayed in the book. We read the book. I did the written work. We got through the steps, and she would call me up and say, one Friday night, she calls me up and she says, Andrea, get your book. Tomorrow you're going to go downtown to this church and plan on being there from 8 to 5. And I'm like, oh, brother. But it's like, when I got her, I said, I will do whatever you say. I was so sold on this AA thing and this miracle that was happening before me, and the people that I was seeing being transformed, and the stories that I was hearing, I was just blown away. So absolutely, sponsor, I will do whatever you say. So I show up to this church one Saturday morning. This would have been 1980. I got sober late 86. So it was either late 86, like I was brand new sober, or early 87, but I was under a year sober. And I walked into this church. Of course, I was 5 minutes late. The place is packed. Every chair is taken. The only place for me to sit is up front, in front of this table where these two old men with big books are sitting. I sat on the floor at their feet, and it was Joe and Charlie. And I got the gift of studying with Joe and Charlie for that weekend and just diving more into the text. And if you're new and you don't know who Joe and Charlie are, then you get on YouTube and just search Joe and Charlie. And they have them going through the whole big book, line by line, pretty much. And this is how we get sober. This is how we get sober. It's in the book. Don't let anybody tell you different. Bill wrote the 12 and 12, and I believe on page 17, he said, our main text is the big book. This is not our main text. The 12 and 12 is not our main text. It's the big book. And that's where I work and live and refer, is out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's so simple, and it's laid out every step. There's no BS. These steps are so beautiful and so clear. Steps 1, 2, and 3 are quick. They're quick. We don't have to believe in a power greater than ourselves. We just have to be willing. Don't let anybody tell you you have to figure out a higher power in step 2. No, ma'am, you do not. You just have to be willing and open-minded to, yeah, okay, maybe there is. Maybe there is. I've seen something in you. I don't know what it is. Maybe there's a higher power. Let's move on. Let's go to step 3. We talk step 3 and we read it out of the book, and then we say the third step prayer together. And basically what step 3 means is, it says, you know, I'm willing to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand him. And right, we don't understand him yet. So it's just, as I understand this higher power, I'm willing to try. And what it's basically saying, or what you're basically doing, is saying, okay, I'm willing to go on with the rest of the steps. That's what step 3 is. Between you and a sponsor or a clergy or whatever you choose, a fellow, you are choosing to go on with the rest of the steps. That's step 3. You're willing to keep going? Great. You've done step 3. Let's get on our knees and let's pray for that. Immediately, at once, we start our list up for step four. Step four can take you a day, y'all. It can take you a day. It has to happen fast. This is how the first 100 did it. They got through it quickly so they could get out on the front lines and help other people. If this is not a history of your life by any means. This is an inventory, like taking an inventory for a store. And you'll hear Joe and Charlie talk about that. It simplifies it. And a lot of people out there, they've made it all super complicated, you know, and made books about four steps. And, oh, you need to take a month to do your four step. And please don't believe it. That's not what's in the book. After the third step, it says immediately we start off. My fourth step, luckily for me, came right out of the big book. I list just the names of people that I'm mad at. That's it. Just the names, just an inventory. And then I call my sponsor with that. Or we're sitting down together. You know, the first 100, they did it with each other. It's like, you know, many times we're saying, okay, go do this list and then call me when you're done. And that's what I do with my sponsees. But if anybody needs help or a person that's not my sponsee, I am there to help them. We don't have to do this four-step alone. Let's do it. Let's get it done. Call me up. Wish I could give you all my number. Perhaps I can. I don't know. But let's run through it. And one column at a time. It's the instructions are in the book. So go look it up. Do it out of the book. And that's how I did it. And it was real quick. The thing is, oh, what if I forgot something? I heard this a lot. Well, if you forgot something, then it's not, you don't have that yet. But God's going to reveal more. Right? We're going to do our steps over and over again through our lives. And so God's going to reveal more to you on your next four step or whenever he does it. And you can go back and think, oh, I need to do a four step on this. It just came up for me. But when you first get here and you'll hear other speakers, I don't know if I should mention their names, but they're really famous speakers. And they talk about how this is triage. When you get here, when you get a newcomer here, this is triage. 1, 2, 3, let's go. And let's get that four step done and keep going. Because we're saved. Their lives are being saved right now. And there was, actually, they did a study in Houston. And I know I'm going to get this all wrong, but I think they sold like 16,000 24-hour-a-day chips over a period of a year, like in the last 10 years. So maybe in 2015, 16. And yet they only sold this central office. The central office sells 16,000 24-hour days chips. However, they only sell 6,000 30-day chips. So we're losing 10,000 people, right, after their first meeting. My hunch is that they're not getting through these steps in those first couple of weeks, which is absolutely doable. It's not a big deal. It's absolutely doable as long as you follow the instructions in the book. It's a miracle. I get so excited talking about it because there's so much stuff out there that says otherwise. But I know that the AA is not a hotbed of sanity. My first sponsor told me, you know, watch out who you hang out with. Look at the people who have some time. And there are people that have some time that are super sick and they're not living in the steps. So watch out for those too. Just because you got some years, you know, we're not a hotbed of sanity. Look where we came from. Look at the lives we came from. And what we did and what happened to us. So be selective. Stick with the winners. Find somebody that has what you want and ask them to be your sponsor. And say, I want to get in the book and I want to get through these steps right now. Let's go. I don't know if I can mention this online. Actually, there are some meetings out there that really focus on this stuff and you need to look for them. And they just follow our primary purpose and they stay in the book. They're not discussion meetings. The meetings I go to, we don't share our experience, strength, and hope. And I must say that it wasn't originally experience, strength, and hope. That has evolved into that. It was originally we share our experience, strength, and knowledge, right? And knowledge is really powerful for the people that who have been here for a while. It's their knowledge that I want to see. Yeah, we got the hope for sure, but I wish it would go back and say experience, strength, and knowledge, and because that's what we get when we come here, and the hope just happens. Anyway, so the rest of the steps, step five, it's no big deal. It doesn't have to take all day, y'all. Come on. I guess maybe a couple hours and go home and do 6 and 7 within the next hour and start on the list. I work a 10-step app. It's if you go to the app store, there's a picture of Bill and it just search 10-step app and Bill's face is on it with black and white. And those questions are straight out of the book, big book about upon retiring. I don't know what page it is. I don't have page numbers memorized. I am super ADD and have been my whole life. I wish I could memorize the book, but I can't. But I'm in it a lot. And I do retain it and live it in my life. And it started to be in my DNA. And I'm able to ask for intuitive thought. And it comes to me now. Anyway, so I'm getting off track. So I get sober, I leave treatment, and I've got this great support group. And as I'm leaving treatment, I'm going to go back and live with my boyfriend again. And my family's like, don't go live with him, he's an alcoholic. And so, of course, we're soulmates, we're going to live together again. And after 1 year, because you can't change anything in that first year, you know, we got married after a year. And we spoke, and we were sober, and we held every position there was to hold. And I got sober in a really small town, and it was Park City, Utah, and we had 4 metal chairs on the concrete floor of Miner's Automotive Garage. So we'd go in this garage, and we'd have our meetings 3 nights a week, and then afterwards they'd go over to the cafe and they'd just talk and have fellowship. And I'm super shy now, and that's okay. That's who I am. But I was super shy then too. And they dragged me over there, and I learned how to laugh. Like, oh my gosh, I'd never laughed so hard in my life. And this was the real deal. And I was completely smitten and attracted by Alcoholics Anonymous and what was going on was there. And I felt like I was home for the first time in my life. My husband and I marry. We have these brilliant kids years later, these brilliant, beautiful kids. And my husband, he had to go back out there. And it was such a heartbreak. And so my kids and I left. Luckily, he's back today. We did not remarry, though. So I call my kids my promises. And my kids have never had to see me loaded, and that's a freaking miracle. They can't even believe the stories I have. You know, sometimes they'll hear me share, and they're like, "Nah, there's no way." And I didn't really go into my war stories, but I did what we do, right? I woke up with who we wake up with out of a blackout in the morning. You know, I did all that. That was a regular thing. That's how I dated. I dated in blackouts, waking up with who knows what next to me. Dangerous situations. Anyway, so I have these beautiful kids, and they grow up in AA, right? And I've never been religious. I have studied the Bible, and I've studied the stories of Jesus that we have from his age. He was from age 30 to 34, I believe, when they killed him. I've studied those stories, and I read those stories to my kids, and those stories are amazing and miraculous, and those stories are Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's how we live our life, is in service and freedom from self. And so, again, I've never been religious, but that was a really great example and easy stories to read my kids, right? So my daughter, she's this brilliant dancer. She started when she was 2 and she had a gift. She ends up being an NFL cheerleader. Her first night cheering for the NFL, she's a rookie. Coach is like, okay, circle up. And all the girls circle up, and they're these precious young women. They're all churched up and they know their Bible and all that stuff. And coach says, who wants to pray? And my AA kid says, oh, I'll pray. So they said, great, Liv, go ahead and pray. And she prays for God's will and the power to carry that out. God, how can we serve you tonight? Use us for your glory. And she prays those AA prayers. The girls started crying. The coach says, they're all teary. And they finished that prayer, and coach said, Liv, will you please be our chaplain? So she was the chaplain for her years on the team. And she's an AA kid, right? Praying these AA prayers. These first 164 pages are inspired. And they're not just for us drunks. AA has been, the 12 steps have been adopted to, I believe, over 200 other 12-step programs. this is for everybody. This is for my kids that are sober and their friends and my siblings and their friends. And my brother goes to a church. He's quite religious. And he asked me about the 12 steps because my family sees me live my life and I seem to do okay and have a peace usually that passes understanding, even in the middle of a dark, dark times, which I have had in sobriety. And my brother asked me about the 12 steps and we go on a big walk and he gets himself a big book and he goes and he teaches it to his like teenage Sunday school classes. So that was so sweet. I was so happy to hear that because it's for all of us. Anyway, so I've got my beautiful kids and I started to go to conferences and conventions. And it was probably 10 years before I ended up moving to Texas and I remarried a Texan. And God bless Texas. I love it. And the AA in Texas is something else, y'all. You can go to a conference, a convention, or a workshop on any weekend you choose. Some states are not as lucky. And so I started to go to conferences and conventions. And I went to the 2000 World Convention in Minneapolis. And it was in, I believe it's called the Astrodome, wherever the Vikings play. And there were 30 to 50,000 of us. I don't know the count, but we filled up at least half of that place. And if you go to a world convention and there's Toronto's coming up in 2025 over the 4th of July weekend. So put it on your calendars, make a plan. It'll change your game. It's so incredible. So this was my first sobriety countdown. And if you go to any conference or convention or a workshop, usually Saturday nights, there's what they have, what they call is a sobriety countdown. And, I went alone. I do everything alone. I still do to this day. And I love that, but I mean, it's fine. And I just got back from an AA cruise with 150 of us. And I had a roommate. We had a great time. We went in the Caribbean. There's so much joy and fun out there happening in sobriety, all over the world. You never have to be bored. You can travel. You can, you can do anything in this life. And we live in this fourth dimension that the normies don't, unfortunately. We go out and we have such a good time. So I'm a Minneapolis, my first convention. And it's like the Olympics. They have a flag ceremony when you go to a world convention. It happens every 5 years. They have the flag ceremony. And then they, speaking all different languages, people from all over the world. You know, we're all in the dome on the Saturday night, and then they start a sobriety countdown. And they knew, you know, they start with who in the stadium has the most sobriety. And that night it was Cersei Whaley. He has since passed, and he was Ebby's sponsor, I believe. Cersei was from Dallas. He had his own little club, and he had 3 meetings a day there. And I met him at this conference, and I ended up following him around for years. He was the kindest, biggest, gentle, giant man. And so Cersei Whaley stands up. I'd never seen him before. And he gets up out of his wheelchair and he's, you know, halfway up and people go nuts. He's got 52 years of sobriety and the stadium is just a roar. And then they count down 52 years, 51. And these old timers stand up and sit down and they get down to 2 years. And then at that point, they went to 18 months. You know, and it just gets louder. It just gets louder. And they call for the 1 years. Can you imagine being 1 year and coming to the World Convention? 1 year is so magic. 90 days is magic. I think 90 days, it was so magic for me. Anyway, so then they count down 9 months, 6 months, 3 months, and 90 days and 30 days. And at 30 days, they start counting down by days. And they're counting 29, 28, and these, you know, new people are getting up. And 5 days, who's got 5 days of sobriety? And I'm weeping. You know, everybody's. You know, it's just so much joy in that room. And they count down 3 days and 2 days. And then they say, who's got 24 hours of sobriety? And that particular night, you can imagine somebody pulling somebody off, you know, grabbing some guy, saying, hey, let's take him to his first AA meeting, some brand new guy. And they had put him down by the front. I mean, I can just imagine how stunning that was for him and the people that brought him. And they say, who's got 24 hours of sobriety? And this young man stands up and he's near the front. And we just cheer. And the stadium is deafening. And just to have him there, because we're so grateful. We've all been given this gift. And there's this new guy in this ocean of love, you know? We're so glad to have him there. And then You know, his life could be saved. He's at his first AA meeting, and it's the freaking convention. So then they call for Cersei, the old guy, to get up. And Cersei gets up, and he's got a wheelchair, and he gets in his wheelchair, and his handler brings him down to the stage, and everybody's watching him come down, and cheering. And Cersei gets up out of his wheelchair, and he walks up the side of the stage, and he waves to everybody, and we're cheering for him. And then they ask the young man with 24 hours of sobriety to come up on the stage. Can you imagine? And so he comes up on the stage, and they hand a big book to Cersei, and they hand him a pen, and Cersei signs with tender love this big book to this young man with 24 hours. And Cersei hands him the book, and Cersei's a big guy, and he just took this young man in his arms and just held him and gave him the big book. And that's a sobriety countdown. And that's not just every 5 years. You know, go to a conference, go to a convention, look up the calendar on your local, at your local central office. You'll find it. Conferences and conventions are all over. And if you're in Texas, you're freaking lucky. I'll just tell you that. Anyway, if you get my number, call me. I'll help you out. So anyway, my life has been so blessed by this, and there's so many things that, you know, I could go on for hours. And actually, how long have I gone on for? Let me look here. We're at about 50 minutes. No, not quite. So anyway, my life has just been a gift, and I have these two beautiful children in my life that have never had to see me pick up. I guess I would explain my life as happy, joyous, and free. And I've also found a group of people in AA that study the big book. And the only meetings I go to are these study groups. I find a discussion meeting, and I will attend that occasionally, because maybe where can I serve there? And so I will attend a discussion meeting, and if it gets off track, you know, maybe I can be there to bring it back on track into whatever the topic is. And maybe I can meet a newcomer that can help me, right? What else do I want to share? If you're new and you're listening to this, I just want to tell you that the answers are in the first 164 pages. And it's very specific, and there are specific instructions. It's not hard. The steps are not hard. If you don't quite understand why you're doing the steps or what they mean, you know, sometimes the wording's a little confusing. It's like, am I getting it like those other guys got it? I heard this in the last couple of years, and what I heard was, just let AA do what AA does. Just let AA do what AA does. Because when you work these steps, something happens. And it's very real. It's very magic. And we love you, and we need you. And y'all are my family. I do want to share one other thing about my current work that I do. I go through my steps every 2 to 3 years. I have an incredible sponsor. She's 40 years sober, and she's freaking magic. And I listen to her voice. And if anything is ever kind of uproarious in my life, I talk to her once a week, and I text her my 10th step every night, but I don't call and whine to Kim. There's no need. I've got the tools, and I've got this book that fortifies and sustains me. And so, but when I hear her voice, it's like, everything's okay. So find a sponsor that does that for you. Anyway, I work the steps every 2 to 3 years with Kim. We run through them over a couple of months, and then we run all 12 traditions as well. And I run the traditions through Al-Anon too. You know, Al-Anon helps me be a kinder human to people out in the world. And AA takes care of me and takes care of my God. And yeah. So anyway, I run through the steps, and then I run through the traditions, and then I take a couple of weeks on the concepts. How have we survived? It's a miracle. Those concepts and those traditions have kept AA alive, and I fear for the future of AA. I know there are some strong groups out there that will always stay the same, and just stick with the winners. And I appreciate this opportunity so much to share. And if I can give my number, I'm available for anyone. If you are stuck somewhere, if you're if you're getting here and yeah, your life's burning down, of course, because of what you've just created or haven't created, that's going to happen. But you need to have a joy and you need to have a hope. And if you don't, find somebody that does and say, hey, I'm not getting this. Can you tell me? Maybe you need to tweak something in your program. Maybe there's just a little something you need to do, because there's a happy, joyous life for you right here immediately. And I promise these steps will happen for you. Once you get through step 9, your first time, you are recovered. Anyway, I appreciate the opportunity to share, and I hope somebody got something out of this. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Andrea.
Yeah.
You can do one of two things. You can share your phone number if you'd like to share your phone number, or people can reach out to me on the website and I can give your number out that way. It's up to you.
I'm happy to share my phone number.
Okay. Have at it.
801-554-1348 is my phone number. Give me a call anytime. Actually, text me. It's even better. I'm able to get back usually quicker on a text, and I will always return calls, and I will always return a text.
Perfect. Okay. I'm going to ask you a few questions. I'm going to start with Joe and Charlie, because you told that beautiful story at the end about this newcomer and this gigantic world convention, and I feel like you were kind of like that person at the foot of Joe and Charlie. So what can you tell the curious fans of Joe and Charlie about them that they might not know?
I can tell you that they are human. And they are just a couple of old guys that are in the big book. And they're not the only ones. There are still many, many men and women just like Joe and Charlie. They do the work like Joe and Charlie. They read the book like Joe and Charlie. I would love to make the suggestion, if I might, I'm not sure, but there's a group. It's a global group, and there's about 15 meetings a week globally, and it's called the Primary Purpose Group. And it started in Dallas, Texas. Cliff Bishop and Joe and Charlie started this and created a study guide. Just Google Primary Purpose Group, Alcoholics Anonymous, and the information's all there. And these folks are just out of the big book, like Joe and Charlie. And so we haven't lost them. They were kind, loving, just as you hear. Look them up. Look them up. Give them to your sponsees. Give them to yourself. It's a gift.
All right. Since we're talking about back in the day, you had mentioned and you can decline to answer if it's too much of an answer, the first edition forward and the fourth edition and the psychobabble that was happening in the 80s. Thank you, Carl Jung and Freud for that.
Right.
Is there something, I'm curious about that. I'm not sure what I would notice if I looked at the first and fourth edition forward.
Right. I will probably decline because I'm not as brilliant as all of the scholars I freaking listen to every week. But if you go to this PPG Primary Purpose Groups, you will have the exact detail on the transition that when you look at the forward of the first to the forward of the fourth, you will see how AA has changed and how we're not handing out all those 30-day chips that we need to. We're missing people. People are going out there and dying after their first meeting. After their first meeting, they should have a sponsor and a bunch of phone numbers. People are walking out of the rooms and they have no tools and they have nobody to call. Don't let anybody leave their first meeting without support. No, ma'am, we're in those rooms to save lives. Look around the room. Who's announcing under 30 days? Go up, offer your hand and your phone number. Because some of that stuff isn't happening anymore. The discussion meetings have been a deal for us. But there's people out there that are still studying the first 164 pages. That is the answer. That is Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not anywhere else.
Yeah, I do find it my responsibility to, when a newcomer comes, it's a man, I'll snag some of the men and like make them chase him down.
Exactly.
Go give him your phone number and get his number. Don't let him leave without.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Tara. I do the exact same thing. I don't care if it's a guy, if it's a young man, if it's an old man, I can pinpoint which guys in the room I can go grab real quick. And if those guys are getting out, I will go and I will talk to that man and I will say, here is my phone number. And I'm going to call you and I'm going to give you the numbers of five men. But usually I'll walk around the room and I know everybody. It's like, go talk to that guy, go talk to that guy. And before I leave that room, that newcomer is standing there with six men around him.
As it should be. That's exactly how it should be.
That's how we are. And that's how we were in the first edition and the times back then.
Yeah. And I loved your talk about, speaking of meetings, your greeter mentioning about having a greeter. It makes such a difference when there is a greeter at the door.
I agree. Such a difference. It saved my life. It saved my life.
She saved my life when I was a newcomer and I was in the greeter position as a service position. Because then you're forced to talk.
I can imagine. It's usually somebody new that's thrown at the door. I'll bet you 80% of the meetings I go to, there is no greeter.
Yeah, there's no same.
And that is something else. And when we're reading the 12 steps and the preamble and that stuff, read it. Don't fly through it. Because I know for me, I listen to every word. I'm like, you're kidding me. Wow, this is what AA is. And I got it from those readings at the beginning of the meeting. And the greeter saved my life. And I actually recently just moved back to that town and I went to that meeting. And somebody called on me because I was a visitor. I got up and I lost it. And I pointed at that doorway and I said, that's where it happened for me. You know, and that day that I came there, I've been there since and there hasn't been a greeter. But the day I was I got up at the podium and mentioned that there was a greeter that morning. Her name was Kathy. And I was so grateful for her. You know, she was there at that meeting just recently. So, yeah.
So I learned from an old timer. During a meeting or during the 12 steps, when they're reading the 12 steps, I would watch him close his eyes during the 12 steps.
Yeah.
I follow lead. And when my eyes are closed, people chitter chatting and being rude or not listening or thumbing through their wallet, I could just block it all out and hear the steps and I can hear the promises.
You are so right. I've got to do that. And then they see you doing that. And then there's going to be hush around you. That's awesome.
They're beautiful words. The whole preamble of it sets the tone for, okay, now I'm here. Stop the chatter. All the monkeys can stop talking in my head and I can just listen.
It's so beautifully formatted and so beautifully written by Bill. I agree. We're so freaking lucky. Are you kidding me, Tara? We're so lucky.
That's a really good life.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you're thinking of now or that you left out of your story that you'd like to share?
Gosh, you know, whenever I do share, I leave and I always, it's like, oh, I forgot this and this and this. But I've learned over the years that wasn't supposed to be brought up. But since you're giving me the opportunity, let me think about it. My main message is just happy, joyous, and free in recovery and the simplicity of this program. That's my main message to anybody that's confused. It's no need. And you call me and we'll work through it. And something else that I did early in sobriety that was really fun and really shocking and really scary for me is because I did everything my sponsor said, she called me up and she said, okay, and this is after I've gone to Joe and Charlie's, right? You know, I did that weekend. She's like, okay, tomorrow night, we've got a really big deal AA speaker coming to town. I want you to go there and I want you to go to dinner with Hugh and his wife. And I'm so shy. And there were some other, a few other people as well. But she's like, I want you to go to dinner with our speaker and his wife. And I'm just like, oh, brutal. Of course I will. Absolutely. And I go in this Clancy and his wife, Charlotte, and I sat right in the middle of them. So I had some really great gifts. There was, one more thing. I was in London with the NFL a couple of years ago and my daughter, and I went to a meeting and I walked into this beautiful cathedral and this lovely woman greets me in her accent and she says, how long have you had sober? I think I was like 35 years. And she said, well, you'll be over in this room to the right's for the newcomers. And I thought, why am I not going with the newcomers? That's where I want to be. But I'm sure they had a whole group of us in there for them. So I went in with the old timers. I sit down, and when I walked in, I felt like I was in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, right? You can just imagine this big London AA meeting. Well, anyway, I sit down, and it's like, wow, this is a different group, and I swear I feel like I was with Mick Jagger and the Rolling Stones, and I bet all these guys are old rockers. So three chairs down from me, I look up, and it is my all-time Rock and Roll Hall of Fame guitarist, I start to sweat and shake. I knew he got sober right after I did, and he's done some beautiful work in recovery. He's just given it all to recovery. And that meeting opens with an opener, a 15-minute opener. And I'm like, I can't believe I'm finally seeing him in person after all these years sober. And I kind of followed his sobriety. And it's fun because like when a famous person gets sober that you like, it's like you follow them. It's like, come on, stay sober, stay sober. And so I knew he had. And so they start up the meeting and they say, tonight, so-and-so is going to be our opener. And it's him. And I am dying. So he shares about how his favorite place is to go work in the prisons. That's just where he feels most at home. And I don't know that all the people in the prison even knew who he was. But he was telling a funny story about how the prison guys are starting a band. And they didn't ask him. And he wasn't going to invite himself. But finally, he's like, can I please be in your band? And they're like, maybe. So, you know, it is just like me and you. It's just, you know, we are freaking siblings in this world. And we live under this, you know, we have this horrible, treacherous terminal disease. But we've been given a gift. And how lucky are we to live in this century with this miraculous thing that happened in 1935? Yeah. So those are the things I guess I kind of left out. And there'll be five more when I finish up. But God got me where he wants me tonight. So
I love that. I absolutely love that. It's just endearing to just be one of many. Yeah. Final question. And you've already kind of answered it, but we'll put it in here at the end again. For the newcomer listening, what message would you like to leave them with?
My message is be careful of the meetings you're going to. If they are sharing about the big book, the first 164 pages of the big book in that meeting, then you're in the right place. If they're sharing about their personal problems, more than one or two of them, you need to leave and you need to find another meeting. Meetings are for us to share our recovery in general. And our sponsor is for us to share our story specifically. We don't share our problems in meetings, ever. That's not Alcoholics Anonymous. That's group therapy. So if you're in those meetings and you're hearing sob stories or something, or real personal stuff, that's for a sponsor. And if you're in a meeting that is speaking generally and speaking about the text of the 164 pages, you're in the right place. And guess what? Those are hard to find. So you need to call me and I need to tell you where to go.
Fantastic.
And also happy, joyous, and free. If you're here and you're miserable, you're doing it wrong, ask somebody.
For more information, read the first 164 pages of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous or visit keepcomingback.net.